Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. American Theater Company presents Sarah Ruhl's In the Next Room, or The Vibrator play, opening this weekend, a comedy that, while set in the Victorian age, is utterly contemporary. So says director Lisa Wilson, who says In the Next Room offers us viewpoints on everything from gender, race, technology, as well as relationships. Set at the dawn of electricity, an upstate New York doctor is enthralled by the new age of technology and its ability to help his patients. And he uses the Victorian electric hand vibrator to treat women and men for the catch-all diagnosis of hysteria. Meanwhile, his wife, in the next room, suffers from neglect and far too little compassion and understanding. It's a complex play, a very funny play. In the Next Room opens Friday evening and continues through the weekend, and also the May 18th through the 20th at the Liddy Dungas Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Lisa Wilson is a veteran Tulsa actor and director, and she's directing the production for American Theater Company. And the play is recommended for mature audiences. Lisa Wilson is my guest today here on Studio Tulsa. Lisa Wilson, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. It's great to see you.
Tell us a little bit about this play. How did you discover this play, In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play?
Oh, Sarah Ruhl. Sarah Ruhl is the most, or one of the, my favorite women playwrights, and I teach women playwrights. And Sarah Ruhl, who is a Pulitzer Prize finalist and has won the Susan Blackburn Smith Award and many other awards, is a very popular playwright across the country. This play has been done many, many times across the country. It's been done in New York. It's been done in D.C. It's been done in most regional theaters, and I've been dying to do it since it first came out. And it has such an irresistible title, of course, that when it first came out and I first heard about it, I said, I've got to read this. The play itself was inspired by a book that was about a history of the vibrator, and the vibrator used in treatment of hysteria in the 1800s.
And it was basically invented for that purpose?
It was invented for that purpose, a medical purpose used only by doctors before it was sold through things that were akin to the Sears Roebuck catalogs and in the back pages of beauty magazines for home usage, much like you still find it in catalogs today.
Yeah, exactly. Certain catalogs.
Or on the internet. No, anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Anywhere, really, truly. But Sarah Ruhl, a friend of hers, gave her a book, and her friend said, oh, you got to read this. This is fascinating. And Sarah Ruhl is one of these amazing playwrights that takes a point in time and looks at how women are affected by it, but by how people are affected by it, how relationships are affected by this point in time, and how technology, and she very often is fascinated by people and technology, plays like The Dead Man's Cell Phone.
Mm-hmm.
And this play, In the Next Room, looks at this intersection of people and technology and psychology and relationships, and oh, it is so contemporary. I still teach here at the university, as well as being a director for American Theater Company, which is producing this wonderful, wonderful play. And I've been dying to do this play ever since it first came out. And I've been teaching it for a couple of years in some courses that I teach for the Women's Studies Department. And it is one of those plays that you read it, and the first time you read it, you go, oh, that's funny. Oh, that's sad. Oh, that's touching. Oh, wet nursing. Oh, the dilemmas of the baby that has. Oh, the marriage. Oh, look at how the doctor treats his wife. Oh, my. Oh. How do they get from the house through the wall out into the garden? And, oh, what women don't know about their bodies. Oh, what men don't know about their bodies. Oh, what people don't know about psychology. Oh, what people don't listen to each other about. Oh, what people get distracted by technology about. Oh, my goodness, that's today. Oh. Mm. And I look at people going across campus looking at their cell phones and talking on their cell phones and spending all their time with video games and still not connecting with each other even more and more and more and more. And I go, this is one of the most potent, funny plays, as well as touching, that I've seen in a while. It touches on so many things: race relations, men-women relations, women's friendships, women right after they have babies and their issues of, I'm so stuck by myself and I don't have anybody to be in touch with. it's an amazing play.
Yeah. Obviously, as a contemporarily written play, it's going to touch on these issues, but again, set in the Victorian era. Mm-hmm. And we should mention that this hysteria diagnosis that was very common in those days. This was not hysteria. This was feminine hysteria.
It was. It was.
I mean, this was not a male.
Well, now, I mean, there is a male character who is diagnosed with hysteria. But it once again was hysteria. And as they say in there, well, it's not common in men, but it's more common. He is an artist, quote, in quotes. And then again,
so there's a bit of sexual politics.
Some sexual politics in here. And also following the war, the Civil War, hysteria was seen, quote, in battle fatigue, PTSD. So people didn't know what PTSD was. And this man has suffered a trauma that has to do with love, and it stops him from painting. But hysteria was very often then associated with anything that was feminine. So anybody who couldn't do what they were supposed to do was diagnosed with this, quote, feminine disorder. You can't do what you're supposed to do. We'll shut you down. We'll put you in a dark room. We'll do these things. We'll shut you off from all stimulation. And then they decided
they thought that would actually fix the problem?
Yeah, that's going to fix the problem. We'll lock you in a dark room, or we'll eventually lock you away, or they did shock treatments eventually later on. The in-between kind way to treat it was with the vibrator. And so this is Saratoga Springs. This is everything that you think might be made up in this play is based on fact. So the treatment with electrical vibrators, based absolutely on fact. The reason that they stopped sending people immediately to see doctors in their houses with vibrators was they became available for home usage. And so doctors weren't making money. You have to realize doctors were more of a newer thing still at this time in the medical academy. We forget how young the profession truly is. And so once it became feasible for people to have a vibrator in their house, and once, you know, it wasn't really that money-making for people, then locking them in to a crazy institution was much more money-making, or sending them to psychiatrists, because Freud was coming up. But back to the play. The play takes place in 1888. It's a company of wonderful characters who come to the home of Dr. Givings and Catherine Givings. And the first thing you meet is Catherine and the doctor and the new baby who is having trouble nursing, and they're going to hire a wet nurse because it's cholera season and the baby is having trouble gaining weight. Mm-hmm. So you're introduced to the fact that they're going to hire a black nanny very soon, and you're introduced to prejudice. You're introduced to this fabulous artist character who comes into the situation. You're introduced to a marvelous assistant in the doctor's office who helps with the treatment. Mm-hmm. You're introduced to the treatment. No, there's no nudity, but there are corsets in the play. You're introduced to what women of a certain class do not know anything about their bodies, and what Victorian bedroom habits in terms of the fact that husbands visit their wives, and it's a very quick, very polite nighttime 2-minute visit, perhaps, you know, with your eyes shut. Mm-hmm. Class relationships are very different, you know, but women still want love. Marriage is still something that should be a bonding of intimacy. And this play is what I would call magical realism, because at the end of the play, you move, and throughout the play, you move on a level that you're going, well, that's not totally realistic. So we don't have solid walls. Mm-hmm. It's done in 3/4 round down in the lovely Liddy Dungis Theater at the PAC. It's got kind of a blend of, you'll go, well, that's sort of realistic, but that's kind of a visit from Oscar Wilde. And some really lovely comedy and these fabulous costumes that my marvelous actors, absolutely an accomplished company of some of the best actors in Tulsa, And the costumes by Krista Patrick with the draper Joe Weimer are just, you need to come and see these to begin with. You will drool. They put people to shame on television. truly, they alone are worth a visit in this fabulous play.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, director for American Theater Company's production of Sarah Rules in the Next Room, or the Vibrator play, which opens Friday at the Dungeness Theater and continues through May 20th, a period piece that really speaks to relations today. The title has this titillating factor
yes,
to it.
Yes.
But as you read about the play, mm-hmm. it's really basically it's a very tender piece between this husband and wife,
yeah.
Very funny, and it sort of belies this titillating title.
It does, but the thing is the innocence of the characters, because you have women who don't know anything about their bodies or their sexuality. So it's not about exploitation of sexuality. When they're being, quote, treated with this vibrator, it's not some sort of going to a sex therapist. They're going there because they have, quote, mental problems.
Right.
And
they're perceived to have.
Yeah. Mental problems. Mm-hmm. They're perceived to be, and they are in pain. They're in depression.
Yeah.
If they're going to be diagnosed, it's they've had a traumatic event or they're in depression because their intellect's not being challenged.
Or they're unhappy.
They're unhappy in their marriage, or they're having postpartum depression.
This was a catch-all diagnosis.
It was a catch-all diagnosis, mostly used in feminine situations, in women or artists. Male artists, or PTSD, mm-hmm. anywhere where there's a male failure. Oh, mm-hmm. gee, you couldn't succeed in the war. You had mustard gas. You had bombs that exploded. You couldn't go and shoot
people. And you couldn't forget that. Yeah,
you can't forget the war.
Yeah.
And so now you can't succeed when you come home. Or you, as a woman, you're seeing things, you're having to withdraw from life, you're having a hard time. So this is the period of time between when you're the cousin they lock up in the room at home, you go to Freud and you get lots of analysis, you get locked into an asylum, or if you have money, you go to a doctor who used to do the, quote, manual treatment. And now, oh my goodness, Mr. Edison, whom they talk about, who literally was and Tesla were having a battle for what kind of electricity. And they were electrocuting animals to prove the best kind of electricity. This is before they've done the World's Fair in 1906 in St. Louis to show off all their electric lights. We're moving from gas to electricity. So it's fascinating time.
I imagine it sounds like you've done a lot of reading about the era just to get ready to do this play. So give us a sense, because I know you do a lot of research in any play or role you do.
I started with the books that Sarah Rule started with, because she's very generous in saying, oh, these are the books that I started with, Hysteria and AC/DC, which has to do with the battle between Edison and Tesla. And then I looked at books on Victorian marriage, and I looked at books on wet nursing, which is one that she referred back to. And then I went and researched Saratoga Springs. We have a dramaturg who has done this as a project for one of my classes, Diane Britton Jessup, who has done this. And there's a posting online, in fact, of all of this information about other productions, which I always do, and what she's done for our cast, so that we get to see what the world of the play is, because you have to live both in the world of the play, the world as it was rooted in then, and the world as it reflects against now. So I'm trying to balance how our audience now is meeting the information of 1888 through the lens that Sarah Rule is presenting it.
And I really think that's the director's task in a piece like this, because if you put this in the text, if it's a part of the play, then the play just crashes and dies. You can't give all this information.
It's
up to you to be able to communicate this to an audience without really spending any time doing it.
You can't burden the play. You can't burden the play.
So how are you introducing viewers to this era?
Well, the furniture, about half the furniture on the stage is mine from my house, and about a third of it is from Richard Ellis, our designer's house. As I said, it's a fragmented set, and then there's lovely cornice pieces that he's designed, and And part of it is, and I know my math is wrong, but Brian, who's our Johnson, who's our fabulous.
So you basically scrounged for Victorian era.
Well, Victorian era, and he's gone out and gotten some. And part of it, the piece that just came in, it's a chaise from Tosca from the opera that just came down, and there's a washstand and a fabulous medical table that was built, designed and built. And I found a picture and said, "Oh, Richard, look at this." And it was built that's specific to this piece because it's a big, important piece in the thing. And Carly Riggs, who plays Sabrina Daldry, our first hysterical patient. There's only two patients in the play mm-hmm. who are symbolic of
right.
of lots more. And that's yeah. why she's written it, is you have the female patient, you have a male patient,
mm-hmm.
right? And you have the wife. So it's not like a parade of patients. You have people who are emblematic of others.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you get a sense of what this is about. So you have just fragments of furniture. It's not an over-decorated Victorian house. You have just enough to give you the suggestion of what Victoriana is. But you open the play, and the doctor walks in. The mom is going, "Lights on, off, on, off. Look, baby, electricity." And doctor walks through, and she goes, "Hello." He walks right through, ignores her. Comes back in and goes, "Oh, hello." Nothing else. Walks back out. And you go, essence of what the marriage is. He doesn't communicate. Doesn't
right.
even realize he doesn't communicate. It's like he is Bones, if you've ever seen that television show,
right.
Bones. He
right.
has, I would say, a little bit of autism,
mm-hmm.
if you really were able to diagnose him. He's so smart. And the doctor, who is played brilliantly by Thomas Hunt, and the wife, who is played wonderfully by Megan Hurley, she's so young and so full of life and so frustrated, and they're opposites, total opposites, in a first year of marriage, 12 weeks into a new baby, and crisis, crisis mm-hmm. that has to be solved, crisis immediately. And she's brilliant, Sarah Rule is. I mean, you got a baby that needs to be fed, a crisis has to be resolved. A male solution will hire a wet nurse. A female who goes, "I feel like a failure as a mother. I can't feed my baby." Crisis.
Yeah. Could be hysteria down the road.
Could be hysteria. You treat them and you won't treat me. And we lock the other room. The wife does not know what happened.
Well, this is the title of the play, In the Other Room.
And right. And in this play, there is no wall. Both rooms are on stage at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We see two sets of action going on stage at the same time. Sometimes there's a treatment going on while there's a scene of people waiting because they can't go into the other room because articles may be forgotten from the other room, or there's a baby that's being taken care of. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
Her playwright's brilliant.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, director for American Theater Company's production of Sarah Rule's In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play. That's the name of the piece, which opens Friday at the Dungeness Theater and continues through May 20th. So as you're working with your cast, what's the way you introduce the cast to the era?
Well, we are very fortunate. I made sure that I cast very early. I cast way back in October. For a play that we didn't start rehearsal for until end of March.
Yeah.
And I had meetings with the cast. We had a read-through, but I had meetings, individual meetings with them, and I gave them research material. And we sat and talked about the play and about the world of the play, and they started working on the characters. But, for example, the Kim Manning, who plays Elizabeth, who is the nanny. She's the wet nurse. So people were hired. If you couldn't feed your baby, you didn't have formula back then.
Right.
It was cholera season. You didn't want to go out with your baby during cholera season. Cholera killed a lot of babies. This wet nurse's baby has just died. A wet nurse is a person whose baby has died. She's hired to come in to feed someone else's baby when her baby has just died.
And while she still has breast milk.
And while she still has breast milk. She is a black woman. This is right after the end of the Civil War. That is full of so much. And there's a speech in this play that just, it shatters your heart. It absolutely shatters your heart. And this is a marvelous actress. And you don't burden her, but she's got to know all kinds of things in order to be able to be that person. And so we talked about that in reference to Tulsa, in reference to contemporary times, in reference to Black Lives Matter in reference to all sorts of things, because all of that swims around this play in reference to status, in reference to what you do and don't say, in reference to all of a sudden standing up to somebody. Mr. Daldry, who is the husband of his lovely wife, Sabrina, brings her to get fixed. Her fingers don't work anymore to play the piano. She's not happy. He brings her to get fixed by the doctor. Mm. Dick Daldry is this lovely man. He really loves his wife, but he's unhappy. His wife is not the wife that he married, his lovely 17-year-old wife. And then when Catherine Gibbings smiles at him, he can misunderstand things. Mm. He's not a bad man, but he's a Victorian man. And Kurt Harris is amazing. We love him, and we go, oh, my gosh, how could you do that? The visit from Oscar Wilde in this play, this English painter who comes and suddenly appears at the top of the second act, Leo, who comes and drops into this play at a moment when you think, oh, things can't get more complex, who has come here with his own little visit of PTSD, when you go, I didn't know men had hysteria. Well, Leo is a visit from an outside world that fits perfectly and complicates the play in a way that you don't see coming.
Now, you mentioned you have a dramaturge, and I always think of when you have a dramaturge, it's usually a new play or you know, maybe something that's completely foreign to your acting cast. Is that something you like to use?
I love to have a dramaturge. Most residents...
Is this just another set of eyes and ears to
hear? It's another set of eyes and ears, but it also is another set of resources. And a majority of... If you're fortunate enough to work in a resident theater company or to work in a regional theater company, they typically have... dramaturgs, because they read the plays before you decide that you're gonna what your season would be. In this case, I've got someone who is going to be a graduate student at the University of Tulsa, and she was in the Women's Studies program, and so I asked her if she'd be interested in doing that, and she said, oh yeah, I'm real interested. It gives a historical background to issues of the play. Mm-hmm. It gives a background to Sarah Rule and a context for a play that's been done in many other places. It helps look up things about the play so that if, for example, people are going, oh, what's a Chattanooga vibrator? That's a historical thing. And props that had to be built and done for the play, you go, oh, they made that up. Well, actually, they didn't. And you can actually look things up. There's a museum. There are many museums, actually, of vibrators out there, and not the things that we think about that are in town, although we have a special giveaway from Priscilla's in town. You can register for people, and a Mother's Day special. If you bring your mom and you use the code word vibrator with a full paid admission, your mom can get in for free on Mother's Day.
Well, that must be true, because that sounds kind of crazy.
It is true. It is true. In the next room.
So the dramaturge adds a lot to...
They relieve part of my burden, because in this case, they have done, Diane has done an online resource that you can actually go to the web, and I can have said something, and then I can go back to the web and look this up, because she has put something together in an online click and go to this link, and it will take you out to the link, in fact, that you can go and you can look at something, or it also gives another place that my actors can go, I'm confused about, and Diane will help them go and look it up. And so it's a resource for them. It's a resource for it would be a resource for the production team if they wanted to help go look it up, because she's a fabulous person at the library and other places.
I think you've mentioned most of the cast during the course of this. How are they reacting to the material? I mean,
well, when they a lot of them knew the play before they came to audition. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think all of them knew the play before they came to audition. So they were all very excited and wanted to do the play before they came to audition. And as they have gotten to know the play more and more, they have come to appreciate the layers of the play. And you begin to live inside the characters and you forget that it's funny. You forget that.
I imagine they probably came to it because it was funny, right?
Yeah, you come
to
it.
I mean, you think of it almost like a sex farce in a way.
Well, yeah.
I mean, maybe at first glance.
You can, although, like I said, some of the characters, this is one of those plays that I sat reading in bed the first time because I was waiting to read the play because I'd heard about it. And it's one of those plays I sat reading late at night in bed next to my husband who was trying to sleep. And I started laughing and woke him up going, oh, you've got to hear this, which he just, of course, loves about me. Bless his heart. We were married over 30 years and he still loves me. But one of those, wake up, Kurt, listen to this. And then I'm crying. I'm crying as I read Elizabeth's speech about her baby. And so you laugh, you cry. What's not to love? Mm-hmm. This is one of those plays where the humanity of these characters, the relationship between Annie and Sabrina, because there's a tenderness in this relationship between these two women that could be Annie in her loneliness that suddenly connects with Sabrina Daltrey. There are so many touches of relationship in this play that it's like ripples that get thrown into still ponds. The central relationship is between Catherine and her husband, who we only know as Dr. Givings, which is amazing.
Never know his first name.
He's the only character who has no first name
interesting.
In the play. But there are the language in this play on some levels is Shakespearean, and you hear it as you begin to go through the play and work through the levels, and you go, oh my gosh, that parallels a scene in the first act. And as you're working on it, you're working on it, you're working on it, you know, I get all of that. But as Keith Sawinski, who's the lighting designer, who's wonderful, he sits there and goes, this is a play you need to come see a couple of times because you don't get it, you know, the first, you don't get all of it the first time you see it. In doing it and in working on it and having our Lori Carthlin, who's our wonderful stage manager, who sits there and goes, it's funny, but it's touching, but it's this, but it's that. And the doll, I went out and bought, I will confess, I went out and bought a doll that is a collectible because we needed a realistic doll for this play. I needed a doll. I needed a Lottie, a character to be on stage that I could believe in for them to carry. Yeah. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
The doll that we could find in town wasn't enough. So I went out and hired an actor collectible doll, but I just couldn't stand it. Our props budget couldn't hold it. So yeah. I went out and did it because the play needed it.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have an excellent run. It sounds like everybody's ready to go.
They're definitely ready to go. We're doing fast changes, and I can't name all the crew backstage, but we have four people changing clothes, and we have
imagine Victorian
people.
Clothes is not an easy, quick change.
Yeah, as I said, magical realism. We have clothes changes down past the corset to the camisole and the bloomers.
Yeah, right.
And it's absolutely... And something's happened in 30 seconds, you know. So, magical realism, Sarah Rule. I love you.
All right. In the Next Room, or the Vibrator Play, opens Friday at the Dungeness Theater and continues this weekend and next weekend through May 20th at the PAC. Lisa, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rich.
Lisa Wilson is the director of American Theater Company's production of Sarah Rule's In the Next Room, or the Vibrator Play. It opens tomorrow evening at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, continues this weekend with performances also May 18th through the 20th. For information on the play, which is recommended for mature audiences, visit TulsaPAC.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.